So this past Thursday, I got a chance to go up to South Hadley to Lawrence House, which is an intentional community of young adults who are serving in the Episcopal Service Corps. And I was there to teach a workshop. And I was an Episcopal Service Corps intern almost a decade ago. And so I had this moment, they're all sitting around on the couches, and I looked at them and they looked at me and I said, where the heck has time gone? How am I, the priest, standing here already? When I was just there. Then I took a deep breath and I refocused on the question that had been in my mind all week, one that had prepared me. What did I need when I was where they are now? What would I have needed from me then? In last week's gospel, the passage before the one we just read today, Peter proclaims that Jesus is the long-awaited Messiah sent to save his people. And I think Peter has a pretty good idea of what that means. It means freedom from their oppressors. It means restoring the kingdom of Israel. It means victory. And then there's Jesus here telling Peter what it actually means. It actually means arrest. It actually means great suffering. It actually means death on a cross. And more than that, Jesus turns to his friends and says, not only will this happen to me, but someday, sooner than you know, it will be your turn. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. I think Peter's shocked reaction reminds us how easy it is for Christians to take for granted that Jesus' life and ministry inevitably leads to the cross. And this question of why Jesus' death was so inevitable, it's kept Christian theologians debating for centuries. Was it inevitable because of who God is and what God demands to atone for sin? Was the crucifixion unavoidable because of who we are, our cruelty and malice and unwillingness to change? Or was Jesus' death on the cross always going to happen because of who Jesus is? And Jesus' words here to the disciples imply this. His sacrificial death was inevitable because a life lived for love always leads to a full and complete giving of self. Keep following Jesus, and it will be your turn to pick up the cross sooner than you know. Focus on what you have to win and gain or what you're owed, and you'll miss out on what matters most. But focus on what you have to give, and give it away, and you'll find that life becomes full to the brim. All across the country this week, teachers of all kinds are welcoming students back to school. Some of them, probably the newer, younger ones, might have the same kind of moment I had. Where the heck has time gone? Wasn't I just a student myself? But no matter how old or experienced the teachers are, great teachers have the ability to hold in their minds what it was like to be the age and life stage of the students before them. Some teachers become teachers because of an educator in their past who was there for them in the right moment, who said the right thing. Others are there to give children what they never had themselves. Either way, all over the country this week, great teachers are beginning a school year with this key intention: to be the teacher they needed when they were young. When I met with folks from St. Mark's one-on-one last summer, I asked people what brought them to St. Mark's. And from many of you, I heard beautiful stories of an older generation of St. Mark's folks, the founders, the generation after, how they invited you to joined them at church, how they were there for you when your child was sick, how they welcomed you into small groups in their homes, cooked you pancakes, taught you what it meant to be a church community. And at the end of that reminiscing, completely unprompted, several of you did pretty much the exact same thing. I saw you stop, think a minute, and say, huh, I guess that's me now, isn't it? I'm the older generation at church now. It's my turn. It's our turn to give away what we received. When I first sat down to write the sermon, I was worried that these were the thoughts of a youngish person, realizing she's not so young anymore, a new person who's continually stopping and thinking, oh wait, I'm the mom. Oh wait, I'm the mom here. And I think a life filled with connection, especially connection across generations, will always be filled with more turns to come. A turn to be the grandparent, then the great-grandparent. A turn to be the vigilant retiree in the neighborhood, to be the wise church elder. It will all be our turn, sooner than we know, sooner than seems possible, to be the one who is at the end of life. After Jesus dies and returns, he has more words for Peter. Verily, truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wish. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go. And Jesus said to Peter, follow me. There is only one end to our stories, and nothing we earn in this life, no objects we acquire, no, not even the accolades we collect, can be carried with us into the next life. Everything we build, even the churches, will crumble eventually. And that's good news. That is good news for the one thing that's eternal. The one thing, the only thing that permeates the barrier into the next life is love. Is the love we give away in this one. Life is full of realizing it's our turn to be for others what others were for us. And in my experience, at least, it usually comes quite a bit sooner than we feel ready for. Surely we have more learning to do, surely more wisdom to receive before we are to give everything we have away. But then God shows up in the person standing where we once stood, and we know it's our turn. Sometimes it's not just about not feeling ready. There's a particular sadness in giving to someone else what you never got to receive yourself. I'm thinking especially about the people who had to be their own parents or parents to siblings way too early in life, maybe because of one or both parents' alcoholism, addiction, mental illness, neglect. All those children of God who didn't get a turn to just be a kid themselves. And oftentimes, if life's treated you that way, the question, what does everyone else need, comes far easier to you than the question, what do I need right now? Self-denial is so automatic that there is, in some sense, no self to give away. And this is the aspect of self-denial that's so tricky. Emphasize it too much, and church can become another spiritually destructive place where people lose all sense of self in a harmful way that leaves them susceptible to abuse or bullying. So the intention to be the teacher, the parent, the coach, the neighbor you needed, that's much closer to what Jesus meant when he said, love your neighbor as yourself. What we mean when we say, treat someone as you like to be treated. That sort of self-denial requires self-empathy. It takes an awareness of your own needs as a first step. It means knowing and loving and caring for yourself as you once were.
door they had always longed for. I have seen how the act of giving another the love and the care you needed becomes a second chance to experience it for yourself. Let love be genuine, Paul writes in his letter to the church in Rome. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Even when neglect is all you've ever known, even if great suffering is all you see behind and ahead, genuine love is still in your power to give. Gentleness and kindness and blessing is always an option. A life connected with others can give us so many chances to be what we had needed. Whether the care we have known in our lives or the care we have longed for, it is that love that we are asked to give away. In that giving,